The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Rosie O'Donnell, renowned talk show host, comedian, actress, Emmy winner, is with me in studio. Rosie, good morning and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
I didn't think I'd be introducing you as Angel of Mercy, but I so must do after your adventures in the Dillon Hotel.
Yes, it was really quite scary and unbelievable, but I had just come from doing a set at the International Comedy Club, and I was there with my cousin, who's about my age, and one of her younger friends. And, you know, I'm very hypervigilant when I go out. I always notice, like, what's going on. And so I see an older woman with, I thought, her two daughters. And all of a sudden, I notice she starts to choke. And the daughters stand up. And I'm watching. And I'm like, that woman's choking. That woman's choking. And then I get very loud. That woman's choking. And I get up. I, like, almost knock over the tables. Like, we were in the bar area. And I run through. It wasn't very crowded. And my friend, who was 40, she ran around the back. I said, have you done the Heimlich? And she said, no. And I'm explaining to her, put a fist, feel where her ribs are. You know, I'm explaining because I had taken some courses. And I was standing in front holding her, checking to see that her mouth and her throat was clear, which it was. And she's got tears in her eyes and she's turning red. And I'm now starting to panic. And my friend is not doing it exactly right. And so I screamed to the whole restaurant, call 911, only to find out later there is no 911 here, but okay. And then I took my hand and I put it on my cousin's and I pushed in and up and out came a big hunk of steak, I believe. And everybody started to cry and it was very, very emotional. And I get back to our little table and I had my tuna tartare there and I couldn't eat because I was so... I was shaking, you know.
Because you say you're good in a crisis at the moment of crisis, but
yes,
post-crisis.
I'm a mess. I'm a mess afterwards. So I'm so emotional that the people next to us were, Rosie, what? How'd you know, Rosie? We didn't notice it. My name's Fiona. And I start talking to them. I start crying. I start crying. Like, I can't. And so I look over, like, lovingly at Angela, this 90-year-old woman, and she's finishing her meal. She's eating the rest of the steak. Like, I couldn't believe it. I was sitting there shaking, thinking I'm never going to be able to eat again. But, you know, at moments like that, you really feel as though, like, God is somehow in your life and helping you get to the places you need to be.
But it's interesting that your old nemesis, Donald Trump, described you as a threat to humanity.
I know.
And it turns out you're a lifesaver instead.
Exactly. I was like, in Ireland, I'm not a threat to humanity. I'm saving elderly women at restaurants. But yeah, he did say that. He's really off his rocker.
You were doing a show in the International, which is a precursor to the show that's coming to the Three Olympia. Is it the same show or do you do stand-up in the International and then a one-woman show in the Olympia?
Well, it's now just a one-woman show because I'm going to Edinburgh after for 10 days to the Fringe Festival and I need to have it in running order before I get there. And it's all new material. It's about the decision to move to Ireland and what that was like. And then myself and my 12-year-old daughter who has autism, how we're managing and how we're finding Ireland, which is, you know, really very dreamy. I didn't know what to expect. I had been here as a young girl when my mother died. My father took us back to Donegal and right near the border there. And I had cousins who were teenage boys and they took us into the woods they had cap guns. They'd shoot the cap guns to watch the helicopters come over with their searchlights. I think of it now and it's like life-threatening and scary. But back then we thought it was like Disneyland. Like, look how fun this is.
Now, the funny thing is about us, because we watch so much American crime dramas and social dramas, including shows in which you star, we're utterly familiar. So when we go to the United States, it's kind of, we know what it's like.
Yes, exactly. When,
on the other hand, you don't see Sandyman on American television very often.
You don't, but I wish we did because I think people would find it charming, as I did. We didn't know where to go. We first were supposed to go to Glenageary, but the house had mold in it. And so the person who came ahead to set it up for my daughter, who likes things to look familiar, I wanted to make sure we had a lot of her stuff there. And so she found us a place in Howth. And we were there for a few months and then we looked for schools and we found one, Educate Together, and it said the National School Sandymount. So I thought that meant the premier school of Educate Together. Yeah. So we drive from Howth for an hour and we pass about four Educate Togethers, unbeknownst to me. But we get into this wonderful school there, Shelley Banks, and we fell in love with the little village. And my daughter thinks it's amazing that she's able to walk to Mace and get an ice cream cone. And, you know, the lollipop lady, Angela, another
gets
Angela.
Gets to know everybody.
She knows everyone. And she said to me, Rosie, you know what? Your daughter doesn't like you walking her to school. And I'm like, how do you know that? She goes, do you ever notice she almost runs ahead of you? And I'm like, she goes, that's not because she wants to get to school, Rosie. That's because she doesn't like it. It's embarrassing. Nobody else's mother is walking them in. And I just started to laugh. And so I asked her, and she said, yeah, I want to walk by myself. Now, in New York, you would never allow a 12-year-old girl to walk to school alone.
Mind you, I have a recollection years ago. I was doing a documentary on the genesis of St. Patrick's Day parades in New York. And I remember being in Times Square. At that time, it was sleazy.
It was before
the cleanup.
Yes.
And I saw this little boy and girl in school uniforms traversing Times Square and all the neon signs and the peep shows and
yes.
all that. And the two of them just benignly walked through without casting an eye one way or the other,
yeah,
completely inured to it.
Yes, we weren't allowed to go to Times Square when I was a kid. My father forbid it, you know, so it was always like a scary, scary place, like more so than the poor neighborhoods that everybody was worried that there would be violence. It was Times Square that, as you said, had all of this prostitution and drugs. And but now it is like the Disney of New York, right?
Yeah.
There's an M&M store, there's Broadway theaters all redone and refurbished. It's become very different in the time I've lived
now,
there.
Now, Sandymount, a village, it's
yes.
by the sea, it's
yes.
got a dart station nearby, it's got pretty much, you could go back to Hoth on the dart if you
yes,
wanted
you can,
to.
Yes, exactly.
So this is all great, but what do you miss about your old home?
Well, mostly my friends and my older children. I have five children. I'm here with my 12-year-old, and the other ones are between 22 and 30.
Done and dusted?
Done and dusted.
Never.
I thought because I didn't have parents and my mother died so young that you didn't need parents once you got to be 18 or, you know, because I didn't have any. And so when my kids now at 30 are calling me asking for, you know, $200 and could I get them their car insurance? I'm always like shocked, like because I didn't have that safety net. I didn't have that as a child. But they need you forever. And that's the shocking thing. So mostly it's the people. But I don't miss the culture. I'm falling in love with the culture here in Ireland, especially in regards to how they treat celebrities. Because
they ignore them,
which is beautiful. Because you feel very, very strange in America when you're held above people, when people think that you're above them, when they come over and don't say, hey, Rosie, how you doing? They shake and they say, can I get your autograph? I'm sorry to talk to you. I don't want to bother you. It's like you lose your humanity in the mass adulation.
We also have the pinnacle of that, I suppose, when a failed property developer, failed casino owner, reality TV star on The Apprentice
yes.
becomes the president.
Unreal. And for me, you know, in 2006, when he was just a embarrassment in New York, nobody respected him in any way. Forbes never would put him on the richest people list because they couldn't verify his income because he was often broke. He's a con man, period. And if you grew up in New York like I did, you knew that. But he got on that show and Mark Burnett, the producer, taught him that if you tell a lie long enough on TV, people will believe it, just how they do Fox News. That's not a news station. That's an entertainment station. And they were fined millions of dollars for lying to the American public.
I read in one particular description of you that at one point you were friendly enough with him to the point that you were at one of his weddings.
Well, I wasn't ever friendly. I've never had a conversation with him.
Okay.
But I knew his wife because
you have these megaphone conversations.
Yeah, exactly. I have public, you know, badgering each other. But his second wife, Marla Maples, was on Broadway with the man who ended up being my leading man in Greece, Jason Opsahl. So he was invited to the wedding because of Marla, and he took me as his plus one. And I thought it was a kick. You know, I thought, oh, I'm going to go get an expensive outfit, which I didn't have any. And I went to the wedding, and we didn't stay very long. It was odd because he had stood her up a few times already. So friends and family weren't thinking he was going to do it this time. But he walked down the aisle in Trump Tower, and or wherever it was a Trump building, and he shook hands with all the celebrities who were there. Not me, because I didn't know him. I had never met him. But I was watching a man on his wedding marching to his wife, stopping to shake hands like he was a car salesman, you know? He has been a mystery to me from the moment I was conscious of him as a young child, when all his planes were getting repossessed off the runways at LaGuardia, when he was trying to sell steaks and cologne. And, you know, because, you know, Warren Buffett always does that, right? All the billionaires do that. No, he's the only one, because he's a con man. That's the bottom line.
And he hasn't stopped. I mean, he's still flogging this, that, and the other.
In defiance of the Constitution, you know, he's selling things from the office. He's taking money and gifts from other countries, the Emoluments Clause. He's breaking every law and every rule that we have in our country, and no one seems to be able to stop it.
Can you explain to me, though? I cannot believe that every Republican congressman or woman, every Republican senator is stupid.
Well, they're not stupid, but they're definitely afraid of him. People in America are afraid of him. They're afraid to stand up to him, against him, because and when I did on The View in 2006, you know, I remember Joy Behar saying, "You're not going to say that out there," because he had had a press conference right before we were live where he had a teenager, Tara O'Connor, who was Miss Teen USA. She had kissed a girl in the village. And they took a picture and put it on all the newspapers. And he made her do a press conference where she apologized. And it looked to me like a pimp and a prostitute. And I said that on the air. And then I proceeded to list facts, not hyperbole, just facts about who he was and what he did. Bankrupt all these times, money from his father, not a self-made man, can't quantify his riches on Forbes magazine. I just said facts, and you would think that I called his mother a whore. You know, he went insane. And for 20 years, he's been using me as a punching bag. Even at the debate, when he was first running, when the newscaster said, "You call women pigs and gross and disgusting and horrible." And he said, "No, only Rosie O'Donnell."
But does it give you a certain satisfaction? I was looking at a piece with the Congresswoman, the Democratic Congresswoman, Jasmine Crockett.
Oh, I love.
A fantastic performer.
She's unbelievable.
And she doesn't really have a problem, as she put it, living inside Trump's brain.
Right.
He's obsessed with her.
Yes.
So it presumably doesn't bother you that such a reprehensible individual finds you inimical to his interests.
Correct, because I am very proud to be opposed to everything about him and all of his antics and all of his racist and misogynistic ways. I am very proud to stand polar opposite of him and say, the right, I deny everything he is, and I won't serve the dark, I will only serve the light. And I believe he is in the throes of dementia. I believe that he is a very mentally ill person who has never been treated. And it's dangerous to the world that he's doing what he's doing now.
What do you make of the health bulletin that was released overnight, that he's suffering from this venous insufficiency, which has led to swelling of the ankles and some marks on his hand and
bruising.
A complexion that looks pretty ghastly?
Well, that's a spray tan. That's a choice.
No, but it's when it, you know, the way it frays around the eyes and all of that?
Yes, yes. Yeah, well, he doesn't look well. He's not a healthy man. And I think it's very funny. And he lives in a deluded reality where he believes his own lies. So when he has to come out and tries to speak to his base, he takes pictures of himself as Superman with, you know, a cartoon version of what, and he's the polar opposite of everything he represents.
When he says things like Biden appointed Jerome Powell, which was not true.
No,
Trump
he did.
Appointed.
Exactly.
Now, does he actually believe that as he's saying it? Do
yes,
you believe?
I believe he believes his lies. I believe he only believes the reality in his world, which is why when someone forces him to face the truth of his own actions and his own essence, he goes crazy because he can't believe that somebody would dare do that.
Did you follow that thing about his uncle, the professor in MIT?
Yes.
Where he said he was the longest serving professor ever in MIT. He listed his background. He got that wrong.
Yes.
Both of those
And that he
wrong.
Had taught the Unabomber.
Yeah. Now, the Unabomber was only revealed in 1995. And he had said he went to his uncle and talked to him about the Unabomber being in his class.
Yeah.
The uncle died 10 years before.
Yeah, he's crazy.
So it's absolutely a certifiable lie.
But he doesn't even know basic history. He talks about the Declaration of Independence in regards to the Civil War. He doesn't understand which came first or why. He doesn't understand what the Declaration of Independence is. There was a reporter, a very respected reporter in America, asked him, when you see that here, the Declaration, what do you think? What would you say about it? And he said, well, it's a declaration. It's a declaration of freedom, it's like a declaration. Like, he doesn't have any kind of brain function, and he's losing his vocabulary.
Now, for most of us watching from this side of the pond, obviously we follow the news, and it's important to get some of the right-wing stuff as well, so you don't end up in a constant echo chamber hearing only the news that you want to hear. But the most telling critiques of Trump have come from the late-night comedians.
Yes.
And now we hear Stephen Colbert is about to embark on his last season until May of 2026 when he's being dropped.
Yes.
And most people suspect it's because of his own criticism of his own network.
Of course it is. But his own network capitulated to a blackmail.
From Trump.
From Trump. That, you know, there was a judge who said that he is guilty of raping E. Jane Carroll. And when they called him a rapist, or that was ABC, but George Stephanopoulos called him a rapist. He sued ABC, and ABC paid him, and he sued CBS, and they paid him as well. But once you do that, like when the mafia was very big in New York City and Little Italy, if you opened a little deli and this guy from the crime family comes in and says, we want $50 a week, if you pay them $50 a week, you're going to eventually give them your whole entire business. And that's exactly what CBS has done. The news media, the news, the Fourth Estate in New York died at the beginning of all of this craziness, and they didn't do their job. It was so easy for me in 2006 to find out facts about him with just a basic internet connection. And they refused to print all the truth about this man.
So they were scared.
They were scared, and they they wanted to make money. I know that Les Moonves has said, you know, Donald Trump was very bad for America, but very good for our business. And when the people only measure in money, human beings suffer.
Now, you have been threatened with your citizenship of the United States been taken from you. Happily, you have an Irish passport that I presume.
I don't, but we're in the process of getting.
Well, will have one. Yeah,
my grandparents were from
exactly,
here.
There's no issue there
there's
at
no
all.
Issue, no.
So you will be able to travel.
Yes, indeed. But I would like to be able to maintain my American citizenship. It's where I was raised and born, and where I'm from. But I'm very happy to get my Irish citizenship as well. However, it is unconstitutional to take anyone's citizenship away
once you're
a citizen. At the moment is right, but the Supreme Court has given him carte blanche, so he can pretty much do what he wants, this very corrupt Supreme Court and this very corrupt Senate, because they just recently voted not to release the Epstein files in the middle of the night, like criminals hiding. Yeah. And when reporters stop them and talk, they run to the elevator there in the Senate buildings, and they don't answer for their constituents. And all of these people are as guilty as he is for all of his crimes.
Complicit.
Yes.
Good news for you, Rosie. Once you have your citizenship, you're over 35, you can run for president.
Me and Conor McGregor, huh? Those are the two famous people running. No, I would never want to be in politics because I'm much too emotional. I'm a very emotional person. People have said, doctors have said to me, you have a tremendous empathic ability, right? And it's kind of the reason for my success, that people stop me and tell me their whole lives. They tell me what their issues are, and it's a beautiful thing to just human to human, but it's an overwhelming thing for me emotionally. And part of the reason that I moved to Ireland, and there was no other choice. I was only coming here. I'm 100% Irish on my DNA, and I wanted to come back to my homeland where my people are from. But part of the reason that I did it was because I have a non-binary 12-year-old autistic child, and the attacks that he has been spearheading about the trans community is overwhelming. But just like Hitler did, they pick on vulnerable minorities first. They came for the handicapped first, and then they came for the gay and trans people. And I knew that I had to keep my mental health. It was for self-preservation, that I wouldn't be able to live in a country and watch him dismantle it as he has done.
Before we talk about the show, and which is coming to the Three Olympia, the question of the robustness of the US Constitution, it's worrying because you were going to have the judiciary, you were going to have the Houses of Congress and the presidency all kind of keeping an eye on each other.
Well, that's what we were told. It would be checks and balances and it would never get out of whack. But boy, is it out of whack.
Which shows that the model maybe needs some adjusting. And I particularly think of places like New York and California, which only have two senators in spite of massive populations.
Yes,
and yet they are vulnerable.
It's not weighted. And the Electoral College was built on a racist principle, and it's not fair. And it should be the popular vote should determine who's the president, with each vote counting. And I believe there were so many anomalies in the last election that I doubt that he won fair and square, because Elon Musk, who was, you know, blew up his satellite right after the election so that there would be no evidence. It's very, very questionable.
Finally, we should return to your show.
Okay.
Its theme is it's your life.
It's my life. And we start with the tragic Irish beginning. You know, I can't tell my life without the story of my mother's death at 39 years old while she had five small children. And that was the defining moment of my life. And we go from there all the way up till present day. But it's not about my career in any way. It's not about show business. It's about my emotional life as a young girl with no mother, growing up to be the mother of five and trying to figure out how to find her place in the world.
And the responses so far in your warm-ups?
It's been really good, I have to say, and I'm very grateful to the International because I needed an hour, which is hard to do in a comedy club, and they gave me Wednesday nights at 6. So for the last 3 months or so, I've been doing the 1 hour. Now, I started with just stand-up because I was nervous to do it there. But now with only 2 weeks left till Edinburgh, I'm doing the whole show in totality as much as I can.
And of course, in the Olympia, the Three Olympia on the 27th of July.
Yes.
Booking from Ticketmaster. Rosie. And,
yes.
What a pleasure. Thank
well,
you very
thank
much.
Thank you so much. And I love your politics and I love your stance that you take. And I think it's courageous and brave, although in this country that's encouraged and that's the norm. And that's part of the reason why I love it here.
Rosie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.